Peah Gimel Mishnah Zion 3:7. This is by far the most involved Mishnah of the whole Masechta. It has two separate topics, neither of which have anything to do with Peah whatsoever. Both are quite involved. The first is talking about the Matana Shchiv Merah, when a person gives something away on his deathbed, and the details I'll explain in a moment. And the second one talks about when a married man gives away his assets in his lifetime to his children, and how we deal with the ksuba for the wife. Okay, both of those topics have nothing to do with the Masechta. They only come up here because the previous mission had talked about karka kol shehu, when sometimes any amount of land is sufficient. So since that karka kol shehu concept of any amount of land comes up in these two topics in this Mishnah, so it features over here. Okay, so let's do each thing at its own time. The first is the matna shchid merah, the gift of a person on his deathbed. So, a bit of background. If a person has an asset, and he wants to transfer that asset to another person, so there's the only way that can be done midoraisa is through a kinyan. There has to be some act which effects the transfer of the ownership from Mr. A to Mr. B. And different types of assets have different types of kinyanim. So if it comes to something that's a chattel, a movable object like a pen, you have to lift it up. If it comes to whatever, and if it comes to, let's say, a piece of property, then it might be a kesef or shtar, a chazaka, different kinds of kinyanim. Whatever it is, simply saying something is yours or writing a contract, say this, you know, I'm giving something to you, is not necessarily binding. Okay? And it simply won't work. Without the kinyan, just won't work. Notwithstanding that, the Chazal saw that a person was on his deathbed, if he is unable to effect the proper kinyanim to settle his affairs, to transfer assets the way he wants to be transferred before he dies, so that could aggravate him and aggravate his situation, and it can actually precipitate him dying sooner than he would have otherwise. And that being the case, Chazal, in the interest of keeping people calm in the wake of potentially dying, they made this din d'rabbanan that a person could gift his assets without a formal kinyan, either through like a written contract or just a verbal declaration, and that would be binding in front of witnesses, and that would be an effective way of transferring his ownership of his assets midrabbanan. Okay, that's called the matna shchiv merah, the mechanism of gifting while one is on his deathbed. When one gives, like he employs that rabbinic mechanism of transferring ownership through this, you know, this, I'll call it like this leniency that the rabbis put in, that only works upon death, just the same way Yerusha works, inheritance works when the person dies, so then automatically his heirs become the new rightful owners of his assets. So if a person does a matna shchiv merah, he says, all my assets belong to you, Johnny. So Johnny, not his heir otherwise. So now Johnny only gets those assets when the person who gifted them actually dies. If he recovers from his illness, so then the would-be benefactor, his gift is not binding and he keeps everything as before. In other words, it's implicit that when a person says, Johnny, I'm giving you everything I have, or even some things that I have, because I'm dying, so he means assuming I die. But if I'm not going to die, I don't mean the gift to actually be binding at all. So, therefore, the difference between a regular gift and a gift from one's deathbed is twofold. The first is a regular gift requires a formal kinyan, an act of acquisition that will effect the transfer of ownership, and it happens right here and now. In contrast, the gift through the mechanism called the from the deathbed, the shchiv merah gift, A, does not need a formal kinyan. It can be done with the written instructions or verbal instructions, but it only takes effect upon the death of the person who was doing the giving. Okay, so those are two differences. Now, how do we know when a person is doing the giving, if his intention is to employ this rabbinic leniency of the shchiv merah gifting or not? So, if he is explicit and says, listen, I'm dying, and that's why I'm giving this to you, so then, of course, he is trying to employ the mechanism that the rabbi set up, and will work through that mechanism, meaning it only is a gift if in fact he does die, and it's not actually effective as a gift until he does die. That's the first of three possible ways. The second, I guess, of four possible ways. The second way is that if a person has already been on his his deathbed for 3 days. He's been sick in bed 3 days and he sees death looming. So again, now, even if he's not explicit, he just says, here, I'm giving you all my stuff or some of my stuff. I want you to have it when I'm dead or whatever. So then, even though he's not saying that he is giving it because he's dying, he's like explicit about wanting to use the Shechid Merah mechanism, still, it's safe to assume, as far as the rabbis are concerned, that if he's been in bed 3 days and he's on his deathbed, so then his intention is to employ that mechanism. And the third possibility is that he got, you know, drastically sick overnight, kafat alav, like the from one moment to the next he became deathly ill. So again, we assume that the reason he's giving it away and he's giving things now is because he's anticipating dying, and therefore he is, you know, trying to use the mechanism of the Shechid Merah gifting. If none of those three are applicable, meaning a person is very ill, but it's not 3 days yet, and he's not explicit in saying that he's gifting because he's going to be dying, and he doesn't have an illness that, you know, sprung on him overnight, so then we're not sure what's going on in his mind. So then the Mishnah will come in essentially and say, we have a fourth possibility. If a person gives away everything, since that's a very strange thing to do, normally no one would give away everything they own. So clearly what's happening is he's thinking, I'm dying, and since I'm dying, I'm trying to give everything away. If, on the other hand, he says, I'll give you, he gives some things and retains some things, so that's not the way of a dying man to act. And that being the case, we'll assume that he was trying to do the gifting based on the usual, not with the rabbinic Shechid Merah mechanism, but the regular gifting mechanism. And that being the case, if he's saying he's giving everything away, but doesn't say why he's doing it, so we'll assume it's because he's dying. And that means if he does die, the gift will be indeed a gift. And if he doesn't die, then he'll keep his stuff. On the other hand, if the person retains something for himself, so then there's no hope of it ever transferring, because we'll assume that he's trying to use the Shechid Merah mechanism, and he is not, excuse me, I apologize. Since he's retaining things for himself, it's evident that he is not going through the Shechid Merah pathway. He just wants to do some gifting now, and therefore it'll all be depending upon the normal kinyanim. If he does a kinyan, then it'll be effective. If it doesn't do a normal kinyan, it won't be effective. So now, with all that background, our Mishnah is going to be considering a case where a person is not any of the first three, meaning he isn't explicit he's gifting because he thinks he's dying. He's not been in bed 3 days. He didn't jump upon him. He's none of those. But he's doing the gifting, and he accompanies the gifting with a symbolic kinyan act. So we're basically saying, like, you know, when I die, I want you to have my lucky charm. And here, let's do some act of kinyan now. Okay, so that's kind of neither here nor there, right? Because if the kinyan is a legitimate kinyan, it'll work now. And if it's not a legitimate kinyan, since he's not employing the Shechid Merah mechanism, the fact that he's doing the formal act shows he doesn't want to use that mechanism. He wants to use some sort of formal act. So if his formal act works, then it'll be the normal. And if he does a legitimate gifting now, then it's a gift. And if not, then it's not a gift even when he dies. So in other words, the point is that trying to bolster the Shechid Merah mechanism by also doing an act that is an attempted kinyan actually goes the wrong direction and makes things worse, because it suggests that he doesn't want to use the Shechid Merah mechanism. He wants to use this, the usual conventional mechanism of gifting. All that said, if a person is explicit that he wants to use the Shechid Merah mechanism, he's just doing some symbolic act, like the kinyan, an action that would look like a kinyan or even is a kinyan, but he's doing it just to reinforce, you know, the weight of his seriousness, but he explicitly says he wants to use the Shechid Merah mechanism, so then indeed it works. Okay, and that's called Yipui Koach. It's just adding strength to the Shechid Merah. So with all that background, the Mishnah starts out by saying, HaKosev Nechosev Shechid Merah. If a person gifts all of his stuff, gifts his stuff away, so, and he's in a scenario where he's not explicitly doing it as a Shechid Merah, and in a case where he does some kinyan that accompanies this gifting. So a person's on his deathbed, again, it's not been 3 days yet, and he didn't jump upon him, and he says, I'm giving you my lucky charm, and, you know, because I'm dying, and then he does some kind of Kenyan to make that happen. So then, if the Kenyan's good, so then it works now. If the Kenyan's not a good Kenyan, it won't even work later. Why? Because you can't do that. If it's not a good Kenyan, it's not effective for later on, and it's not using Shubmira, because he's, it seems, because he's just giving one thing away. On the other hand, if he's giving everything away, then we'll assume he is trying to use the Shechid Merah mechanism, and if he is explicit about wanting to bolster it with the act, then it would work. And if not, then he's in bad shape, meaning it's not effective, because if he does a real Kenyan and he thinks it's just a Shechid Merah Kenyan, he's actually being Megray, he's taking away from the Shechid Merah gifting, and he's undermining it, because he's not using the rabbinic mechanism of writing or declaring, he's doing an act, and therefore if he does the act but he intends the act to work after he dies, then it's just neither, it won't be valid at all ever. Okay? So that's a lot. So the Mishnah says inside, HaKosin L'chasev Shechid Merah. If a person writes, or for that matter verbally declares from his deathbed to give stuff away, Shier Karka Kol Shu, if he retains something for himself, a little bit of land or some other asset for that matter, so you see, he's not necessarily intending to die. So then, if he uses a regular Kenyan, and if he says the Kenyan should work for right now, then Matnaso Matana, then the gift is really a bona fide gift, and the recipient can keep it, whether the guy dies or not. On the flip side, if he doesn't use any valid Kenyan, he just says, when I die, you should have my lucky charm. So then, since he's only giving something, not everything, so then neither here nor there. He's not using we're not clear that there's no reason to think he's using the Shechid Merah mechanism, because he didn't say he's using it, and he's not necessarily dying, and he didn't do a valid Kenyan, and therefore there'll be no gift at all, and it wouldn't work either way. Lo Shi'er Karko Kol Shu, if he doesn't leave anything for himself, he gives on his deathbed, within the first 3 days, not sudden, not explicit about he's motivated, because he's dying, he says, listen, I'm giving you everything that I own when I'm dead. So now, that is the old, looks like it's going through the mechanism of the Shechid Merah story, and that would be effective, except if he does a Kenyan to accompany it, he's undermined everything. In other words, he does a Kenyan that is Megareya, takes away from the Shechid Merah mechanism of the rabbis, because by doing the Kenyan, he's suggesting that he wants the Kenyan to be what affects the transfer after he dies, and not the rabbinic enactment of the Shechid Merah gifting pathway. And that being the case, everything is totally botched up, because the Kenyan is not valid, because he means to do it later on, it's not going to work now. And since he showed he wanted to use the Kenyan instead of the usual Shechid Merah rabbinic loophole in gifting without doing a formal Kenyan, so then even if he dies, the gift isn't a gift, because he didn't do it the way the rabbi set up. He used this Kenyan, which sort of undermined it. So therefore, ein matnaso matana, no matter what, whether he gets better or dies, either way, the recipient, the would-be recipient, actually doesn't get the gift. Okay? Hope that was clear. Now, the second part of the Mishnah goes on to a new topic altogether. Now we're talking about a person who has assets, and he also has a wife, and the wife, therefore, will have a ksuba. The ksuba protects the wife in the event that he divorces her or dies, so then she is entitled to something, whatever is specified in the ksuba. We'll call it 200 zuz, okay? So the 200 zuz that the woman's entitled to is like a encumbrance, like a lien on all of his real assets. What does that mean in less fancy words? It means if he has any property that he owns, so then she has first rights to that property. It's like encumbered. It's almost like if you do a title search on those homes, so to speak, on the list will say ksuba of the isha, because his wife's ksuba, she's a claimant, which means, just to illustrate the point, if Mr. A has a wife, and then he has one house, and then Mr. A sells the house, and then Mr. A dies penniless, so Mr. A's wife will take her ksuba and go to the purchaser of the house, who bought it 10 years ago, and say, listen, when you bought that house, there was an encumbrance on it, that it was mishubad, it was leaned to me and my ksuba, and you have to pay the ksuba, the 200 zuz. Kind of the same way, if you have a mortgage from the bank, and then you sell your house, the bank will go to the new purchaser and say, it's all very nice you bought the house, but listen, you first have to pay back the debt to us because it's encumbered. The house is encumbered. There's a mortgage. The bank has first claim to it. Okay? Fine. So, that's the backstory. Now, the case of our Mishnah here is that a man is gifting his his assets to his own children. Okay? So normally, let's say he has three apartments and he's giving it to his three sons. Now, normally, just like the previous story I gave, the woman's ksuba will have a claim on the purchaser of that house. So really, the three sons' apartments should also have a shibud, like a lien, an encumbrance to the ksuba of their mother, the wife. Okay? But the Mishnah is going to say that there's a way that he, the husband, can give the apartments to the boys and at the same time relieve them of any further encumbrances to the wife. So here's how it works. Hakosav nechasav lebanav. If a person's giving away his stuff to his children, v'kasav leishto karka kol shehu. And right now, at the time of the gifting of the properties to his children, he also gifts something to his wife, some land, any amount of land to his wife. So then that gift that he gives to the wife will come in lieu of, in place of, her ksuba. And then that will mean that she will have no further claim on the other piece of property that the father gave away. Now, the Gemara says that for that to work, according to the Tanna Kamma, three conditions have to be met. The first condition has to be that she indeed gets something. When he's apportioning, she is one of the recipients of the apportioning, so that sort of like puts her on a pedestal, if you will, or that may be a bad expression, but it recognizes the wife and she feels satisfied with that, and that's important that she's one of the recipients. The second thing is she has to explicitly agree to it. She has to say that, you know, kibla aleha, that she accepts upon herself, yes, in place of my ksuba, I'm accepting this gift. So it's explicit and that's clear. And the third thing is that she has to be present at the time of the gifting to the sons and not object, because the idea is that if she wasn't there, then maybe she would have had an objection if she would have been around. In fact, she was silent later on just because she wasn't around, she wouldn't make a fight or something. So three conditions. She has to get something formally as part of the gifting. She has to explicitly say she accepts that in place of her ksuba, and she has to be present at the time that the gifting is given to the sons. Okay, that's the shita of the Tanna Kamma, and if any of those three things are missing, then she doesn't lose her ksuba. Rabbi Yossi Omer, im kibla le'el, he says, if that second condition is met, and she is explicit about accepting it upon herself, so then, afo pi shelo kasav la idu ksubasa. Then even if the other two conditions aren't met, she still loses her ksuba, meaning the first condition I suggested was that she has to get something. But here Rabbi Yossi says, listen, if she says, I'm okay getting nothing, I just want, you know, what do I need to have any assets for? My boys will take care of me. I'm fine with that. So then indeed that works, and the ksuba is, you know, considered to be paid off and is no longer an encumbrance. Similarly, he holds that the third condition of her being present is not essential. If she says, I agree to the boys getting, you know, the assets and leaving me, then I don't have any further claim with my ksuba, even if she's not around at the time the boys are giving the gifts themselves, still she's lost her ksuba, she's forfeited it by her own agreement to do so. And the Gemara actually adds a second possibility, besides for explicitly accepting it, which is if she's given something and she accepts the boys again the rest, even though she doesn't explicitly say, yes, I accept that, she just silently accepts it, you know, without a formal confirmation that she accepts this in place of her ksuba, that also would be considered to be her receiving her ksuba because she got something and she didn't object to the boys getting everything else. Okay? Now the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, meaning that if she gets something and doesn't object to her children getting the rest, or if she even gets nothing but she explicitly says, I'm okay with that, I'll rely on my sons, so then indeed that she has the power to forfeit her ksuba, and that would be effective in losing her ksuba. That's unique to ksuba, by the way. It wouldn't work with, I don't know, other kind of creditors or whatever the story is, but for ksuba it does work, and that therefore, like Rabbi Yossi, is the halacha.